coming up on the British TV watch list.
And let's not forget the Circumlocution Office, a government department that exists to do absolutely nothing. It's satire, but it's also painfully real.
From cozy mysteries to intense police procedurals, we talk about the characters, performances, series, and episodes from your favorite British TV shows.
Hey, how's it going? It's Michael T. Today, we're diving into one of the BBC's most powerful period dramas, Little Dorrit. It's got emotional depth, a knockout cast, and a story that still hits hard, even though it's set in Victorian England. Now, if you've ever felt stuck in a system that doesn't care or carried the weight of someone else's choices, this show is for you. So let's set the stage. Little Dorrit aired in 2008-2009 in America as a 14-part miniseries on BBC One. I watched it on BritBox, where it was condensed into an 8-part miniseries. It's based on the novel by Charles Dickens and adapted by Andrew Davies, the same guy behind Pride and Prejudice and Bleak House. He knows how to make a period drama feel alive. Bleak House is also an excellent period drama. We'll do a podcast on that show one day. Little Dorrit has this rich, shadowy look. You'll see candlelit rooms, narrow alleys, and lots of tension. It's got an air, an atmosphere, and it's all anchored by a cast that is just stacked. Claire Foy plays Amy Dorrit, and this was before The Crown made her a household name. She's phenomenal here, soft-spoken, but emotionally fierce. You feel every ounce of her loyalty, her restraint, and her heartbreak. Matthew McFadyen, yes, Mr. Darcy from Pride and Prejudice, plays Arthur Clennam. He's the moral compass of the story. Thoughtful, kind, but stuck in a world that doesn't reward decency. And then you've got Tom Courtney, Judy Parfitt, Andy Serkis, Maxine Peake, Eddie Marsan, Alan Armstrong, Amanda Redman, Freema Agyeman, and many more. It's like a who's who of British acting royalty. Each one inhabits their role to the point where all the other roles they've played disappear. Little Dorrit is set in and around a debtor's prison. That's a concept that sounds almost medieval, but was very real well into the 19th century. Back then, if you owed money and couldn't pay, you could be thrown into prison. Not for theft, not for fraud, just for being broke. And once you were in, getting out wasn't easy. The logic was twisted. You're locked up until you pay your debt. But how do you earn money if you're behind bars? It was a system built on shame, not solutions. Maybe they hoped it would be a deterrent. Some prisoners were allowed to work, sewing, crafting, doing odd jobs, and the money they earned went toward their debt. But it was slow and often not enough. Others relied on family or friends to bail them out. If you had no one, you stayed. The concept dates back to 1178, when imprisonment for debt to the crown was first recorded. By 1352, it had extended to all debtors. By the 18th century, over half of England's prison population was incarcerated for debt. These weren't hardened criminals. They were often just ordinary people who had fallen behind on rent, loans, or business obligations. Conditions varied. Wealthier prisoners could pay for better accommodations, while poorer debtors faced overcrowding, filth, and starvation. Marshalsea Prison, where Amy Dorrit is born in this story, was one of the most infamous. Charles Dickens' own father was in prison there when Dickens was just 12. That trauma shaped his view of society, and it shows in his writing. Debtors' prisons weren't just about money. They were about morality. Being poor was seen as a personal failure, a stain on your character. And the longer you stayed, the deeper that stain became. In Little Dorrit, the prison isn't just a building, it's a legacy. Mr. Dorrit clings to dignity, even as the walls close in. Amy carries the weight of her father's shame, even after they leave. In the UK, reforms began in the early 19th century. The Debtors Act of 1869 largely abolished imprisonment for debt, except in cases of fraud or refusal to pay when able. In the United States, debtors' prisons were phased out between the 1830s and 1850s, though practices varied by state. The U.S. Supreme Court declared them unconstitutional in 1983, but critics argue that modern systems like jailing people for unpaid fines or court fees still echo the same injustices. Little Dorrit makes sure we don't forget. So let's talk about Arthur and Amy. Their relationship is one of the slowest burns you'll ever see. No grand declarations, no sweeping gestures, just two people trying to do the right thing in a world that keeps pulling them apart. Arthur is drawn to Amy's kindness. She's the one person who doesn't ask for anything. And Amy, well, she's used to putting others first. Her love is patient, almost invisible. There's a scene where they sit together in silence, and it says more than any speech could. It's about emotional repression, about duty over desire. Very Victorian, seems to me to be very English. And yet, there's hope. You root for them, not because they're perfect, but because they're good people. Now, Little Dorrit isn't just a love story, it's a social critique. Dickens was fed up with the way Victorian society worked, or didn't. One of the big themes is class. You've got characters climbing the social ladder, only to find it's built on sand. Wealth doesn't equal worth, and poverty doesn't mean ignorance. Then there's morality. Arthur tries to help people, but the system punishes him for it. Meanwhile, others cheat and lie their way to success. It's messy, and that's the point. Life hasn't changed much, right? And let's not forget the Circumlocution Office, a government department that exists to do absolutely nothing. It's satire, but it's also painfully real. Have you ever tried to get a straight answer from a government bureaucracy? Nah, I didn't think so. The show lets you feel the frustration, the injustice, the rage. Charles Dickens is the man behind Little Dorrit. He wasn't just a novelist, he was a social force. Born in 1812, Dickens knew hardship firsthand. Like we said, his father was sent to debtor's prison, and young Charles had to work in a boot blacking factory to help the family survive. That experience shaped everything he wrote. Dickens' novels tackled poverty, child labor, class inequality, and government dysfunction. He made readers care about the people society ignored. And he did it with characters you couldn't forget. Oliver Twist, Ebenezer Scrooge, Miss Havisham. They were all fictional, but they were reflections of real struggles. Dickens gave them a voice. He also changed how stories were told. His books were serialized, released in monthly installments. That meant working-class readers could afford them. And because he wrote in real time, he could respond to public reaction, shaping the narrative as it unfolded. At the time, his impact was huge. People wrote letters to newspapers demanding reform. Politicians took notice. Dickens didn't just entertain, he provoked. And today, his legacy lives on. We still use his characters to talk about greed, redemption, and injustice. Dickens reminds us that storytelling can be a tool for change, that fiction can reflect truth, and that empathy, real, messy, human empathy, is the first step toward justice. Hey, let me ask you a question. How would you like to sleep with what's been called the world's softest sheet? I can feel it kind of like gliding over my arms and legs. They're made from bamboo, super, super soft. And get this, they maintain and improve that luxurious feel with each washing. So you buy it, you use it, you wash it, it gets better. We're working with CozyEarth.com. CozyEarth.com. Use my promo code BTVW1. Helps me with a commission, and you help support the British TV watch list. So thanks in advance. But you get the best discount available. 41% off exclusive right here. Go visit the website, CozyEarth.com. Apply the promo code BTVW1 and get those luxurious soft bamboo sheets from CozyEarth.com. BTVW1.
Hey there, I'm Jennifer from Wholesome TV Picks. While you're enjoying Michael T's British TV watch list, I've got a few questions for you. Tired of previewing everything your kids watch? Sick of scrolling through shows that just aren't family friendly? Or maybe you've even searched what to watch with the kids tonight? You're not alone, and you're exactly who this podcast is for. I created Wholesome TV Picks for busy parents like you. In about 10 minutes, I give you one wholesome recommendation, what it's about, why it matters, and where to stream it. No explicit language, no inappropriate chatter, and maybe most important, I'm doing this as a parent, not a critic or an influencer. If you love the quality storytelling and thoughtful detail Michael brings to his show, you'll feel right at home with mine. I grew up on the good stuff, shows that made you laugh, made you think, and brought families closer together. I highlight those timeless stories that still hold up today with a few modern picks that keep it clean. New episodes drop weekly, bringing you entertainment with timeless values. So follow Wholesome TV Picks on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform and start enjoying family time around the TV again.
Let's zoom out for a minute. Little Dorrit is part of a long tradition of British period dramas. Think Bleak House, Downton Abbey, Poldark, Wolf Hall. These shows have a certain feel. Candlelight, corsets, carriages, and a whole lot of emotional restraint. But here's the thing. They're expensive. Like, really expensive. Period dramas face costs that modern shows just don't. You can't shoot on a regular street. You need cobblestones, gas lamps, and buildings without satellite dishes. That means filming in historic locations, which often come with restrictions or rental fees, or building sets from scratch. Then there's wardrobe. Every costume has to be era accurate, tailored, and often handmade. You're outfitting dozens of actors. And don't forget props, letters sealed with wax, antique furniture, horse-drawn carriages. It all adds up. Even lighting is tricky. You want that soft, flickering glow? That means candlelight simulations, special rigs, and careful cinematography. It's not plug and play. Directors like Peter Kosminski from Wolf Hall have warned that rising costs are putting British drama at risk. Some productions have had to cut exterior scenes entirely, keeping the action indoors to save money. And public broadcasters like the BBC and ITV are feeling the squeeze. So why do we keep making them? Because they resonate. Period dramas let us explore timeless themes, class, love, duty, injustice, in settings that feel removed but familiar. They offer emotional depth, moral complexity, and a kind of storytelling that's slower, richer, and more reflective. And let's be honest, there's something comforting about watching characters navigate chaos with dignity and restraint. It's nostalgic. It's also a show of resilience. Period dramas also depict history, and hopefully they do it accurately. I believe art drives beliefs, which then turn into perceived truth, not necessarily absolute truth. And please, if you like period pieces, stick the things that originated with Dickens, Jane Austen, Elizabeth Gaskell, Henry Forster, and the like. And don't waste your time on trash like Bridgerton, or at least don't lump that show into the same bucket as these adaptations of classic authors. Bridgerton is nothing more than a masquerade. Okay, so why watch Little Dorrit now? Why watch any period drama? Because ever since Adam and Eve, human behavior has not changed one iota. And we enjoy watching love stories, family tragedies, social upheaval, and good triumphing over evil. Whether it happened in 2025 or 1825, doesn't matter. The themes will always be the same. And it's compelling to see how people from 200 years ago handled similar problems and situations we deal with today. Hopefully we can feel good about how far we've come and if we've improved or regressed in our ways. Hey, thanks for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, stick around. We've got more British dramas to unpack, more characters to meet, and more stories that still matter. Before we go, I want to say hello to our listeners in Kailua, Hawaii, Trondheim, Norway, and Matsuyama, Ehime, Japan. Please spread the word. Share this episode with a friend who loves British TV, maybe more than you do. And thanks for listening to the British TV Watchlist. Until next time, cheers!
The British TV Watchlist is written and produced by Michael T. in Honolulu, Hawaii. Speculation and opinion powered by caffeine and curiosity. For more clever takes and cold cases, remember to subscribe, like, and share. Keep the mystery and the moxie rolling. All rights reserved. Copyright 2025 Michael T. Media.